So welcome back to another episode of Off the Hook.
Off the Hook.
Off the Hook. It's kind of everything revolving around Off the Plan Apartments. I don't even know where the name came from, but Off the Hook it is. We're live. For those of you who don't know, I'm Mark Bernberg, Managing Director of Ray White Projects, and I'm so excited today. I've got Andrew Fanatsis, a good friend, a colleague, a mentor, and an ex-Liverpool Football Club fanatic like myself, so you'll never walk alone, any of you out there. And if there's Man United listeners, we actually don't want them.
You can switch off now.
Switch off now. Don't worry about it.
We don't want your money. We don't want your business.
We don't want your money. We don't want your business. And you're terrible. Okay. But today we're going to talk all things property. Known Andrew for a long time. And as I said, he's someone that I personally look up to, that I have as a mentor.
Too kind, but.
It's true. You've got a lot more experience than I have. And Andrew, why don't you just start off by just sort of letting everybody know who you are?
Yeah, so just a bit of a background. Later this year, 20 years in the industry.
20 years.
20 years.
Well, now you know why you're my mentor.
Yeah, so very fortunate to start off in a master plan estate in Wentworth Point. So that was 5,000 apartments. Now the area's got sort of 12,000. So
5,000 apartments.
Yeah, wow. So it was a great learning curve. It was amazing. And then ever since, it's just been trying to work out how to get the maximum outcome for developers. And that's, I think, the focus and the mindset which might be missing out there, and that's why I think we work really well together, is at the end of the day, the client is the developer.
Yeah.
You know? And so you've got to focus on that, and that's what we've been doing for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's start off maybe by taking our listeners on a slight journey. So what would you say would be your top three biggest things you've seen that have changed maybe over the last couple of years? Maybe, I suppose there's GFC, then there's COVID, there's those big, you know, black swan events, but look, how would you say it's changed?
Number one is the number of owner occupiers. So there's been a massive transition from marketing projects, targeting investors, doing all your research, all your data, capital growth, depreciation and calculators about what it's going to cost, the negative gearing. That was the mindset previously. Mm. But what we've seen now is that living in apartments is a choice. Mm. So it's transitioned from being something where I can't afford to buy a house in this area, so I'm going to have to go for an apartment I'm choosing to take advantage of all the benefits.
Wow.
Of it. That's number one, I'd say.
That's a big mindset change.
It's huge, because the mindset change needs to start with the developer and with the planning process, because the product has to be different.
Yeah.
And we're seeing product that's in the marketplace from start to finish so long that it's sort of missed the boat a little bit, but that's the number one change. Number two change is, I think there's a younger demographic coming through who don't have to own property. So what they want is what they want, and if they can get it, they can get it. And if not, they're very happy to rent vest. You know, that's something that I'd say a decade ago was very sort of infantry in its stages, 20 years ago, unheard of.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's probably number two. And then number three would be the amenities. Mm. We're looking at our quality of life very differently post-COVID. We all want to have a better standard of life, a better experience. So where we live is, it's very important, but it's just where we are. So we want to have more amenities in terms of, not necessarily facilities, but working from home and all these sort of things. If buildings have work rooms or yoga rooms, people are really open to that. So I think they're probably three biggest.
That's really interesting. So summarizing that, you'd say mindset of the buyer, rise in rent vesting, and that sort of, let's call it living lifestyle, and then amenities. I think amenities is an interesting one. I want to touch on that for a moment, because there's always a balance, isn't there? You've got some apartment blocks just got everything, right? Indoor this, indoor that, outdoor that,
theaters,
stacking system.
Rooftop this.
Yeah. And then some have none. And I think it's always a balance, because what we found is that, you know, some buyers are very, very sort of strata focused. How much is the strata? How much are going to pay? Because that's the big difference, right? You know, you go and get a house, that's what you pay, and you got your land tax. But obviously in apartment blocks, you got strata. And then do you use the pool? Don't you use the pool? Should you pay for the pool? Don't you? So it's...
Yeah, I think one of the things we've seen explode with the inflation is the insurance costs.
Mm.
So the more amenities you have in terms of pools and gyms and whatnot, that strata and the insurance side of it's gone through the roof. So people are like, do I really need it? I can go to a gym up the road. I can. So definitely people are very conscious about the cost of strata, because it only goes up and it doesn't add that much value to the overall property. So I think when we start talking amenities now, it's more about space.
Yeah.
So in terms of even common areas, we're talking with a lot of developers now about isolating those areas. So rather than just having this open rooftop, and you've got to put planter boxes, you've got to do all these things. So why don't you do it in a way where it creates little sections where people can say, yeah, I can sit here with three or four friends, and it's very private. That's what I think we're
moving
towards.
As opposed to that sort of large courtyard where you're all kind of sitting in
a
classroom.
Everyone can see everyone. Correct. Yeah. You know, it's all open. I think that's where we're going to start moving towards. And some of the larger developers are doing that. I've seen that years ago with Sekisui House, for example, in Wentworth Point, where they've created areas in the rooftop where you can have a little bit of privacy.
Yeah.
So just because I've got a compromise on the space, because we know space is really expensive, doesn't mean I don't want the opportunity four or five times a year to use a common area.
For sure.
So I think the area now is more important than the actual facilities.
So let's stay on that theme for the moment in terms of area. How have you seen, let's call it, product mix changing over the years? You know, traditionally, if we look back 2015, 2016, it was very heavily investor-centric. It was little boxes, as many apartments in a block as you can. You know, that's obviously changed. How have you seen sort of, let's say, the apartment sizes and apartment mixes changing?
It's changing. I don't know if it's changed. It's changing still because, yeah, there was a formula. You get certain percentage of one, certain percentage of two, certain percentage of threes, and out you go, and they would sell.
And traditionally, what would you have seen that mix to be?
Oh, you would have seen no more than 20% one bedrooms, and then a good 65 to 70% would have been
the two bedrooms, yeah.
And then around the 10, max 15%.
Yeah.
So one bed's maybe up to 25%, but now you're looking at it saying, well, where am I building? Mm. You know, who's in this area? And it's not easy because council's not always forthcoming because they also say, oh, we need a mix. And but I think developers are starting to understand because of the first point I made, which is you've got more owner occupiers that are coming in. What they want is what they want. If I sold a house for $4 million, I'll pay you whatever, but I want what I want.
Mm.
I'm not going to let you put me – we've had them say, I'm sure you've heard it, you know, I'm downsizing, but I'm not moving into a coffin yet.
Yeah.
So I want that space. So we're starting to see square meter rates. Traditionally, again, when you do your feasibility, everyone's all about square meter rates.
Yeah.
I've stopped using square meter rates for 3 or 4 years now. I start looking at things like, for example, we've noticed that in recent projects we've worked on together, that a south-facing unit that offers privacy will get more than a north-facing unit that doesn't. Because I'm selling my house, but that doesn't mean I want to give up my privacy. It doesn't mean I don't want to have the ability to have 15 people at home. So that's where we're starting to see the product mix starting to change now, because that feedback is in the marketplace saying you can get a higher square meter rate for a three-bedroom than a one-bedroom.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was unheard of.
Oh, you'd be laughed at.
You laughed at it five, 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, whereas we're seeing it. We're actually seeing it now because who has the money?
Mm.
The people who have the money are the people who have just sold their house for a top price and they want what they want. The people that don't have the money is that entry level, but we're seeing even that's going to change. We're seeing a massive shift in wealth at the moment. We're seeing that aging population starting to distribute the wealth, and we're actually seeing a jump. So we're seeing the older generation bypassing the 55-year-old kid, saying, hey, you're okay. You jumped into the market and bought a house for 200 grand.
Yeah.
What are my grandkids going to do?
Yeah, for sure.
And they're bypassing the kid, going straight to the grandkid and saying, here's $1 million.
So, wow. So in the future, we're going to see the bank of grandpa and grandma, not the bank of mom and pop.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and we're starting to see that now. And then like anything else, when you get the money so easily,
yeah,
then you're going to turn around and say, oh, I've got $1 million. Yeah, I'll borrow 500 to buy to live in Summerhill. I'll pay 1.5 for a two-bedroom in Summerhill because it's a good area
and
it's going to hold value. And but at the end of the day, I'm only doing it because I'm borrowing $500,000. So what we're coming into now is that shift where we've got – so this is the first time ever where you've got your baby boomers controlling less real estate value than the generation X below them.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and that's because they're moving to retirement homes, they're downsizing, so they still have the most equity and they still have the most wealth. But in terms of the value of assets held in property, they're now no longer number one.
Wow.
And so that's we're starting to see it. Yeah, that was as of end of June 24.
So, I mean, let's just talk about these square meter rates for a moment, because for those of you that are not from the industry, you wouldn't know this, but developers price up everything at a dollar per square meter. So if you've got, we'll make it really easy. If you've got a 100 square meter apartment and it's $1 million, it's 10,000 per square meter. We'll let everybody do the maths. But it's, I've always found there's been that quarter, that sort of disconnect, because nobody else talks in dollars per square meter. Everybody else, you know, we don't walk a client around the apartment and go, this lovely one bedroom here is at 13 and a half a square meter. You go figure out the price and come back to me.
And it's interesting because overseas they do.
Really?
Yeah, overseas in a lot of countries they do. So they're quite familiar with it. But in Australia, it's not the case.
Yeah.
And where we struggle is to say, well, for three extra square meters, so instead of a 75, if I've got a 78 square meter apartment, I'm trying now to charge another $50,000. It just doesn't register.
It depends where those three square meters are, right? So like, for example, if you've got an apartment with a long entrance hall, which we quite often see, you know, I call them the cricket pitches, so the kids can close the door, paint some wickets on and have a good time. But normally there's four or five, or even up to six square meters that's taken there. So suddenly a developer's charging $50,000 for a hallway.
Yeah, so the design is super important, but yeah. This is where we're finding, because again, there's limitations. When you've got 75 square meters and you've then got to adhere to all the planning. So when you adhere to the planning elements, you've got to adhere to sunlight and there's a whole range of things that you have to adhere to.
Yeah.
But when you extend yourself, say, to 80 square meters internally for a two-bedroom apartment, now you're giving yourself the room to actually put a functional study.
Mm.
Or you're giving yourself the room to have a larger living space where somebody's not going to pay you the square meter rate. They're just going to pay you $100,000 more for five square meters.
Yeah.
Which is 20,000 a square meter.
But it's functional square meters.
Correct.
And I think that's what you and I have seen a lot in the market right now. So I want to now move from dollar per square meter to let's talk about the square meters. What are you seeing from apartments? Let's talk maybe sizing first and how that's maybe changing. But then also, what are you seeing starting to see in apartments now that make them more functional?
So we're starting to see, I believe, in apartments, really similar to what we're seeing in society, where you've got that gap between the rich and the poor expanding. We're starting to see that that's going to happen with apartments. People will pay a massive premium for 10 extra square meters because it will be such a premium and so rare.
Mm.
But then we're still going to start catering for the entry level and affordability. Because if you forget that, you don't have enough buyers on the high end.
Yeah.
So when you're building your development and planning and putting your DA in place, you've got to start thinking, who is my audience? So we're doing a lot of work at the moment now before developers even go to an architect to try and determine personas of their buyers, because that then comes back to what do you provide? So for example, are we going to be providing, instead of providing a 75 square meter two bedroom, are we going to be providing an 80 square meter apartment on one title that gives you a 30 square meter room and gives you a 50 square meter one bedroom? And there's a marketplace there for someone to say, hey, I can live in the one bedroom and rent out the room.
Mm.
It helps with my affordability until I can then take over the whole property.
Right.
Because people and the affordability is the hard thing at the moment. It, you know, we're talking about $1 million really as an entry for two bedrooms in Sydney.
Yeah.
As a starting price, very hard to find anything under 900.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So you need to provide product that works. And if you want to bring the investors back, developers need to start looking at potentially, again, you've got a couple of studios that are the equivalent of a one bedroom, but instead of getting $650 a week rent, you're now getting $400 on each room, you're getting $800.
Yeah.
So product, what I've seen over the years, adapts. So would have been after the GFC, and Rose Hill would have been the first area, we started to see the dual key.
Hmm.
Dual key apartments starting to come out because the rent return was solid. And then the developer could turn around and say, well, if I can't sell them, and I have to hold them, my cash flow is good.
Yeah, for sure.
So what I don't know what you're seeing with a lot of your clients, but my clients are pressing the button on developments. They don't want to be holding and sitting on land when interest rates are so high.
Yeah.
Just chewing away. But they need to also then safety sort of their whole process and give themselves a buffer. So they're trying to come up with different products. So I think we're going to start to see a massive premium for that extra 10 square meters.
Yeah.
Because people that can afford it will not have that much choice and they'll pay anything for it.
Yeah.
And we're going to see on the lower end a change in product mix that provides either investors with a better cash flow or provides young buyers with versatility.
Yeah, that's awesome. So to summarize again for people out there, you know, what it sounds like now is traditionally you would have a building with a mix of one, two, and three. I mean, even at the three bedroom, I would say you could see the same result. We have people saying, listen, I don't want a 96 square meter three bedroom. I want 120, 125, 130. So I think what I'm understanding is that no more is it just a mix of one, two, and three. Inside of one bedroom, there's now a mix of entry level, get your foot into the market as an investor, great rental yield, maybe a larger one bed, and then even a one bed plus study, which, you know, then you could rent out the second room, or, you know, if you, it's kind of, let's call it the cheaper version of a two bedroom.
Yeah.
And then in the two bedroom and three bedroom, probably two sizes, you know, smaller, more attractive price, entry level, and larger, more premium.
The apartments are no, like when we're building 150, 200 apartments, it's no different to somebody coming and subdividing an estate and building 200 homes, and they're just kit homes.
Mm.
They're kit homes. Mm. If you want to go customize and you want to go get an architect to customize your living space, it becomes really expensive.
Mm.
So developers have had to have that approach, and this is where when we're dealing with purchasers, we have to explain to them sometimes you're not getting a custom build. The only way there's any cost efficiency is because they're repeating the product,
right?
So they're still going to have an element of that repetition.
Yeah,
I just think they're going to have to broaden the type. So rather than having type A, B, C, they're going to have A1, A2, B1, B2.
Yes,
you know, C. That's where I see it going.
Sure.
And then parking's another big one. You know, parking.
Tell me more.
We're starting to see that parking is becoming very expensive to provide.
Mm.
And so it's becoming difficult for developers to justify because the sale price isn't there, but the demand's there. So again, part of the study that we're doing is to try and understand what do purchasers desire? So how high is the desirability for a second car space, but also what's the willingness to pay for that?
Yes.
Because you know, consumers want everything,
mm.
but will they pay for it?
Do you think consumers understand why parking is so expensive?
No, they have no idea. Yeah, they have no idea because, again, as you're going bigger on smaller footprints, then you have to go deeper.
Yes.
Three basements, four basements, which requires more support, more steel, more engineering, like more cost. So now it's sitting at around $50,000 per parking bay.
Wow.
To deliver. So having a three bedroom. We went through a period where the councils didn't want to look as though they were very much encouraging driving. They want to be green friendly. So they try and limit how much parking there is as well. But that's where there's a little disconnect. I'm selling my four bedroom house. I've still got a teenager living with me.
Need that second bay.
You know, need it. You know, and whether or not councils are going to come to the party, I don't know. But it's another issue that I'm seeing where there's three bedrooms with one car space and you can't sell them.
Mm.
It's not about price.
That's such a good point. I want to go back to what you were talking about because I know you're doing a lot of work on sort of pre-feasibility and really getting the product market fit right, which I'm a massive proponent of. And I think what you're doing in that space is both revolutionary and needed because – I think we've both experienced where we've been given a set of floor plans. I can think of one in the suburb where there was two, remember in out west that you sent us, and we looked at those floor plans. And I think we both turned the project down just on the architectural plans going, all you've done is you've given this to a junior architect and said, I've got X space. I want you to fit as many apartments in that space as humanly possible. Don't worry about how functional they are.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I learned from a mate of mine who's really is as a development manager, just thinks outside the box. And he found an opportunity years ago in, so before Queensland started to boom, they were really struggling to get projects off the ground. And he found to say, okay, well, if you've got a DA and this is your mix, if I tweak the mix and get rid of one of the basements, so instead of having two or three basements, I remove one, the cost saving by doing that, and then by providing a different product, and it became feasible and profitable. And that's where I started to really understand that we're not looking at it properly. We're just not, you know, we're not really understanding how do we make this build. And now it's important because there's no margin left with the building costs going through the roof. There's no margin. If you're a developer, good luck making money because by the time the builders are so nervous on giving you a fixed price now because they got caught out a couple of years ago. So if they do, it's a solid fixed price, and then you're trying to make a margin, it's really tough, really, really tough. So more than ever, you've got to look at that project and say, who's going to pay for what? And this is what I talk about with junior salespeople to explain that. You've got a product, it's got 15 features, okay? People don't pay for the features. they pay for the benefits of those features.
Mm, love that.
Yeah, you know, so features anyone, and everyone will pay something different. So for example, WaterView.
Mm.
Someone might say, I'll pay you 30 grand for the WaterView. Someone will say, I'll pay 200.
Yeah.
So understanding that, that range and saying, well, we only want four buyers who are willing to pay us the maximum for the view, the maximum for these inclusions, and getting that makes your project feasible.
Yeah.
It's a massive mindset shift.
It's so difficult though, because you know, we're on the coalface, we're tasting dirt every day, we're getting feedback from buyers every day, and you can see it. You can see, particularly if, because construction costs have risen so high, developers are pushing the boundaries on what they can achieve, right? And it was something you actually taught me. I told you you're a mentor. You taught me, you know, if you're going to charge premium prices, it's the one percenters that have got to be perfect.
Yeah.
So they're going to walk in, they're going to get an overall view of the building and the apartment, and then they're going to say, well, okay, you know, I should be paying X. You want to charge me Y. Why? And yeah, they're going to then go and have a look at those one percenters. And if that product market fit is not right,
you miss out.
You're dead in the water.
You miss out, and you've got to look at those one percenters across the whole building, your common areas, everything. And you can't do it if you don't know who your audience is. Mm. And yes, audience does shift from today and 4 or 5 years' time.
Mm.
But if you get the right foundation, so things we're looking at now is people love fitness, anything to do with fitness.
Mm.
So if you've got a big site, you know, within your common area, you can develop a track that might be a 1 kilometer track. So people know if I run this 5 times, I've run 5 kilometers.
Functional.
You know, it's functional, but it also works with what they're trying to,
correct,
to achieve. These are elements where people start to add value above and beyond an apartment. Everyone's offering an apartment. The fact that you've, and I tell people all the time, you don't like the splashback? It's not expensive to change a splashback. You don't like, that's not expensive. The flooring, the coat of paint, that's not what's going to get you top dollar. It's the things that aren't easily replaced, which is, for example, maybe your ducted air. If it's a premium ducted air system, not easy to replace that.
Yeah.
If you've got speakers in the ceiling, you know, automation, all the tech stuff, that stuff's not lighting. Lighting for me is one of the most underused elements to enhance the value of a property. You're running everything. It doesn't cost much to run additional lighting, but that additional lighting is wow.
It gives you that wow effect, like strip lighting and, you know, LED underneath the cabinetry, stuff like that.
Yeah, and so as you said, one thing we're working on a lot now is this pre-DA stuff, which is really cool. The other thing which is cool, you don't know, but I'll tell you now, is we're working on, because part of that younger generation, they don't want to take risk. So they're looking, and you'll know because you've dealt with a lot of iCert builders and whatnot, they're looking for that reassurance from a third party. They're looking for a third party to say to them, hey, this builder ticks the box because they've got iCert rating. This builder's got, you know, defect insurance, tick the box. So they don't want to run around and do that homework, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They just want to be, say, here's iCert. So we're working on a system now where we can say, hey, this building is work from home friendly. This building is certified for safety.
Yes.
Why? Because it ticks all these boxes. It's got this security system. It's got this surveillance. It's got this visibility, all these sort of things where I think that's going to be the next evolution, where buildings are going to come to the market and say, we're certified work from home friendly, pet friendly, single person friendly, safety friendly, and provide them with why, and that's what people are going to pay for.
Oh, I love that. I couldn't agree more. I think, yeah. People, there's been so many horror stories, right? And I think everybody listening here will know somebody or a friend or a colleague that's moved into an apartment and special levies have come out or they've had to move out.
I mean, yeah, disaster.
I have a friend who actually lived in what was there? The one in...
Opal?
Not Opal. There was
Mascot
Towers. Mascot Towers.
Yeah.
And she had to move out. I mean, she's bankrupt now because she had to pay her mortgage and her rent. I mean, how can you afford to do that?
Crazy.
So I think, you know, that's a good point. Like, let's maybe just touch on that for a moment. What would you say moving forward now are some of the critical features that a building or boxes that a building would need to be ticking?
Yeah, I think the ability to either work from home or study from home. So again, you're seeing older people downsizing and they're thinking, oh, there's an area here. My grandkid, when they're over, they can do a bit of study.
Mm.
You know, there's a quiet space where they can go plug their laptop. Because think about an apartment. You're never more than 4 meters from the TV.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, if you actually need to study, so think about all the families that can benefit from that. Kids doing exams, you know, grandparents with kids that are studying that they look after. So those sort of spaces I think will be really important. I think we're starting to see a lot more single people. So what happened was when the rents went up a lot, it sort of forced people to share rooms in two-bedroom or three-bedroom apartments. As product changes and becomes more affordable, and I think we're going to see the shift in interest rates, we're going to see APRA reduce the serviceability buffer to make borrowing easier, people on their own are really going to look at safety. So safety and security, I think, is going to be a really big,
big one.
Yeah, moving forward. Pet friendly is huge because I think 50% of people have a pet.
No, it's actually higher. We had to do our CPD point course the other day, continuing learning and development. We love it. And there was a whole thing on strata. And what I saw is that at the moment, 75% of Australian strata renters have a pet, with another 15% wanting a pet, which would take it to 90%. I don't know if that's a goldfish or a Doberman, but we had that whole, we're working on a project together where it was it one dog and two cats, or is it two small cats dog, and a medium dog?
But it's happening. And so having the ability to say, because your building has an area where you can just quickly go walk your dog if you need to, because it's got these elements where it does A, B, C, D, it provides that additional value. That's what you're going to be charging for. So anything to do with safety, anything to do with private space, even dining, private dining areas, we're starting to see becoming popular.
Yeah.
Because again, if I want to have 10 or 15 people, the facility's there, I can do it. I don't have to worry about people coming into my apartment. So you've got to offset somewhere. If you're going to provide smaller spaces, you've got to then provide common spaces.
Yeah.
If you're going to provide bigger spaces, then you can charge the dollars for it, but you can only do so many.
Yes.
So I had a client come to me with a really good project in Crow's Nest. It was 18 three-bedders, beautiful design, big. I said, you're going to have six of these walk out the door. Out the door. Back then it was like $4 million or whatever it was. Where are your other 12 buyers with that money coming from? So that balance is what I think is going to change. You're going to get three or four really high-end apartments in most buildings, and then you're going to have to start to go smaller for affordability, but then you're going to have to provide some common spaces.
So it's almost that Goldilocks, right? The small, the medium, and the large.
I just, it makes sense. It makes sense. And in Sydney, we haven't needed to think at this level because it's just always walked out the door, but it's not happening now. And the investors have got many other options. You can go to Perth and buy house and land for 680.
Yeah.
You know, you can go 25 Ks north of Melbourne, buy house and land for under 700.
Yeah.
So there's
nothing like that in Sydney.
Doesn't exist.
Nah.
You're lucky to buy a block of land within 30 kilometres for under 7. I don't even think that exists.
Well, we were selling blocks of land out in Jordan Springs and that was at 850.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I'm saying if you want to get the investors back, and the investors want to be in Sydney, but they just can't justify the return, you've got to start convincing people that the one bedroom that you're paying 750 for is going to be $1,050,000 in 4 years. And it might be.
Yeah.
It might be, but they can't see it.
So you see, ask you to rub your crystal ball now.
Yeah.
So you see property prices continuing in Sydney to escalate? Like, how do you see the next 2-3 years playing out?
Yeah, I personally see from the end of this year some aggressive growth. So I saw the other day, so during COVID in October of 2020, that was the peak of business failure, and it was like 5.08%.
Wow.
It's currently at 5.04. So it's 1% less than the peak. So I'm of the opinion that interest rates are coming down, and they're coming down quick and hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Reserve Bank spoke earlier this week saying, I think the market's forecasting 65% chance cut the next meeting. And they're saying that we're not thinking that way.
Mm.
But I think the economy is going to force their hand.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Trump doing his tariffs. It's not looking great out there for the general economy. So I can see a 1% drop by the end of the year. So we've had 0.25. I can see another 0.75 by the end of the year. And that all of a sudden is going to start. So I tell people all the time, property is driven by the herd. So when the herd of sheep come into the market, it runs. So right now the herd, they're just looking at the sky. The leaders are the ones that are actually sniffing around and transacting.
For sure.
But what will happen in 6 months is the herd will put its head down and say, where are our leaders? Oh, they're over there. Let's go have a look at what they're doing. Oh, they're looking at property. Well, maybe we should look at property. And it's going to start. So I think the end of this year is is going to start, and then that momentum will carry through 26, 27, and 28. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a 30, 40% increase.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So
that's apartment prices.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Because the housing market's already run
on the
cheap money, but the unit prices haven't moved much.
Wow. Okay. So then in ending, what advice would you be giving buyers in the market right now?
If you're a buyer, depends. If you're an investor, I'll give advice for an investor.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's separate them.
So if you're an investor, I would be shopping around to find a developer who's just launched a development and they need pre-sales for the bank, because they're going to be a little bit conservative to get those sales, to get the funding to build.
Yeah.
So if that's 2 years away, you're going to get a lot of growth in that time. So if I was an investor, and I've done that on one of the projects at Homebush.
Yeah.
And I've seen a 15% growth in 12 months.
12 months.
15% growth in 12 months, okay? So that's if you're an investor.
Yep.
If you're an owner-occupier and you're a first home buyer, it'll be all about how much of a saving you have. So if you've got a big inheritance and you can go and use that money to buy a home, excellent. If you don't, I would seriously consider not owning where you live.
Yes.
So I tell young people all the time, if I was to do it all over again, I wouldn't own where I live. Unless I had a lazy $3 million just sitting in the bank doing nothing.
Which not many of us have.
Yeah. So you'll always get a better return on that money spread out across several investments than in your home.
Yes.
Which is why that rent vest. So I would be, as a first home buyer, jumping in, getting the government grant, as much of it as I could, sacrifice where I live for 6 months to make sure I qualify for that grant, and then I'd be renting it out and then going and renting where I want to be. But as long as you're in the market, because a client told me a long time ago, and I banked this, they said, when the GFC came, we thought, that's it. This is when the market's going to crash. And so we didn't do anything. And then a few years later, when the market started to run, we didn't have sites. So as soon as COVID hit, they started buying everything, because they said, it's not on us to know how the market will keep going.
Mm.
We just know the government will keep it going. And it makes sense, because the residential property market in Australia is worth $11.2 trillion.
Mm.
The debt on that 11.2 is like 2.4.
Mm.
So the LVR is nothing.
Yeah.
There's so much. So what people don't realize, what a lot of people don't, and I'm just telling you to pay attention to this.
Pay attention.
There's so much old money. People and generations that were given farms for nothing.
Mm.
And those farms are now being subdivided into 1,000 lots. So there's so much equity in the property market that it can't crash. It just can't. And if it even hinted to crash, the banking system would be done.
Banks can't afford mortgages to fail. They just can't.
So I don't know. Have you ever seen the market drop more than 11 or 12%?
I don't know. When's it dropped 10%?
So I think once I saw it drop 11 as the most, but every time it gets to that 8-9%, all the banks do is ease up their policy and bring new borrowers through, which supports the market.
Yeah.
The bank is not in the business of real estate. They do not want to take property. And they've got a 20% buffer on average. So as soon as the market starts to shift down, they ease up on their lending and they come through and support it again. And I've seen that 3 times. So I've got no fear that the market's going anywhere but up, especially the apartment market. The gap between houses and units is too big.
Yeah, it's way too big.
It's way too. Historically, it sort of hovered around 40, 45%. I think it got to 100% difference when money was really cheap, and now it's sort of back down to that 70-odd%. Money's not going to get back to 2.5. We're never going to see that again. I think if we get to a point where we see 3.5% fixed rates, I'm going to be jumping in at that point. But I think we're seeing some really solid growth, not just because the market's running. It is literally 50% more expensive to build an apartment now than what it was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So that in itself has to be relayed, you know, it has to be. So it's not all about the market doing its thing. You've got to remember the inflation we've been through is still going to catch up with the
market. And I think that's such a good point. And I think really want buyers to understand that, because I think that sometimes the sentiment in the market is, oh, developers are trying to make too much money. It's not the fact. It's the fact of the matter is they cannot afford to replace the stock at the values that they were. It's as simple as that.
I can tell you very, very, very few developers have made money from 2020 onwards.
Yeah.
Very few, because again, the margin isn't there. So normally you've got the builder makes a bit of money and the developer makes a little bit of money. What's happened is the builders have said, we need all of it. Otherwise we're going to go under. Because and again, when you're talking about development, there's five elements to development and costs. Labor, that cost never goes down.
Yeah.
Okay. It's so protected here. It's never going to go down. Material can plateau, but won't go down. Compliance is always, always going through the roof. Finance, which is at the highest it's been for a very, very long time, and your land. So the land is the only component that's taken a whack in the last 18 months to 2 years, because it's the only thing you can control when you walk into a development.
Yes.
These other four, you can't. And they're all going up.
So really, if I could summarize that for our listeners, yeah. Where you're seeing really good value apartments, would it be fair to assume that they bought the land at the right price?
They bought the land at
because the right price. Because those other four really are fluctuational and really market related.
Correct.
Whereas the land, it's did you buy right or didn't you buy right?
And if they're coming to the market now, you can assume that they've bought okay.
Mm.
They're trying to get enough, because once they get their finance in place, it's still 20 months before the building's finished.
Yeah, 100%.
And so that's why I'm saying, if I was to go now as an investor, I'd be buying something that's just about to start or starting. There is a small risk that they don't get it off the ground and then your money's tied up for 2 or 3 years. So that's where you've got to do your homework on who you're buying from. Yes. And make sure that they've got a track record of delivering. And you don't want to go buy from someone who's building 120 units, but the biggest they've ever built before is 20.
Yeah. You know, and that's where I think also look for, you know, if you're out there, look for the ICERT rating, look for the latent defect insurance, look at the track record, go read the reviews on Google, do your own research. I mean,
The defect's huge because not everyone gets it. It's almost like if you look at it as car insurance, if you've had 5 or 6 accidents, it's not easy to go get car insurance.
Yeah, it could speak to my wife.
Mine too the other week. But that's where it's really important. So if developers are getting the 10-year insurance, then you can assume that they've got a decent track record.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they've still got the option of paying a building bond, fair trading, or getting the insurance.
Yeah.
They only get the insurance if it's cost effective. It's only cost effective if they're quality.
Yeah, for sure. And there you have it.
Awesome.
For those of you listening, if you're an investor, get in now. If you're a first-time owner or an owner-occupier, now is the time to get in. The sheep and the rest of the herd are coming.
You don't want to follow the sheep.
No.
You don't want to follow the sheep because you're not going to – I hate to say it, but this is when your agents don't get back to you. This is when you think, I'll put in an offer, and then you chase up the agent, and the agent says, oh, that's sold, and then you get caught up in a frenzy.
Mm.
I keep telling people all the time, I've got this thing, it's a property clock. So the 6 o'clock is the bottom of the market, 12 o'clock is the top of the market. I would always want to buy, I'd rather buy at 5 o'clock and lose that little bit and get 100% of the uplift than wait and say, oh, I'm buying at 7 and miss.
Even 9 o'clock.
You don't know. Yeah. And because when it runs, we only know in hindsight.
Yeah.
We only know the bottom of the market was there because we've passed it.
Yeah.
So you don't want to wait for hindsight, because then it's already too late.
And I can't stress this enough. We say this, you and I, to buyers. Buyers get infatuated with trying to time the market. And in property, it's not timing the market, it's time in the market.
Yeah.
So really, unless you're buying at the absolute peak, and we are not near that right now, there's actually no really bad time to buy. You've just got to wait. Long enough.
There's no bad time to buy, because you're right, you just have to wait.
Yeah.
You just have to wait. And it's not, you should never be getting into real estate thinking 6 months, 12 months.
Yes, 100%.
You know, you should never, ever, ever. You should be getting into the share market and try and get a dividend or whatever it is. But in the long run, it is one of the safest assets you can hold.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs a roof over their head. And the rental market, I can tell you, no one thinks it, but I think it will go up towards the end of this year. Another little aggressive, because our population, so the growth of the Australian population from 2014 to 2024 and the projected growth from 24 to 34, and I know this, I'm doing a presentation tonight and I grabbed this data, is the highest in the world. So for both. So for both the previous 10 years and the future 10 years, we are number one.
Wow. So this, and there's no stock, right?
There's no stock.
There's a shortage of stock. We know vacancy rates are at all-time lows. So there's no stock. Rents are going to keep going up. Interest
two
rates.
And a, 2,500 millionaires from overseas came to Australia last year. So again, we think we're expensive. Go buy in the heart of Mumbai.
Yeah.
Go buy in the heart of Singapore, Hong Kong. You know, we're not that expensive. So people are coming with a different understanding of property. Like I said, they come from those areas with the square meter rates in mind. Oh, what'd you pay for this? I paid $50,000 a foot, you know, whatever. Yeah. That's how they talk.
Yeah.
We're just not accustomed to it. And the population is growing so quick that all it takes is a small portion of that population to be coming from overseas with money, and it shuts you out really quick.
100%. Yeah. And that's thank you so much. That's Andrew Fernandez today on Off the Hook. By the time this comes to air, Liverpool should have wrapped up their 20th league title.
We'll be celebrating.
We will be celebrating. We might come back and do this all in Mo Salah full outfits if we want to.
That's when all the Man United fans can come back and talk to us.
100%. We can't wait to have you. So, Andrew, thanks for being on the show.
Awesome.
I've learned something today. I hope everybody that's listening to this learned something, and we'll speak soon.
Awesome. Thanks.